I get the recording devices going, and for the sake of the recorded lessons, this is the seventh lesson on marriage, divorce, and remarriage. It should be the end. Lord willing, we'll finish the definition phase, the definition and definition application phase of our study on marriage, divorce, and remarriage. We've been looking at this issue, and we've gone through the generic modern definitions and even the specific modern legal definitions, the application, if you will, of what modern society calls divorce. And we've seen the highlights, that is a disunion or a bond breaking of legally married people, the breaking of a legal marriage contract or covenant. It involves formal and legal action in all societies that legislate marriage and divorce. That is necessary for a divorce, legal action, formal action. And it's to result in a permanent separation of legal association. There is no more legal binding on the people. There's nothing that the law can bind them to one another unless it's part of the contract once the divorce has gone through. Of course, those are common usage words we're talking about. When we really want to learn the definition, we want to look at the usage of the day it was used. And so that's why we're really going to the Bible. What is the Bible? In the Hebrew and the Greek, what do the Bible words for divorce mean? And what can we learn from those? So we studied those fairly extensively. And the highlights we see is that the Bible also speaks of divorce as a disunion. It's a putting away of the husband mentioned in the New Testament, or the wife specifically in the Old Testament. We just see that in the New Testament they're allowing for the social convention of the Roman and Greek era that would allow women to put away their husbands as well. And so that's addressed also by the Lord. So it doesn't matter who does the putting away. The disunion can be done by either the man or the woman, but it's still a breaking of that marriage bond or covenant. It involves legal formal action even in the Bible. That certificate of divorce was given in Deuteronomy 24 from the ancient times. And we see that Jesus still mentions that in the New Testament era. And then it's always, almost always, at least in the Bible, seen as a negative thing. There's desertion or abandonment or adultery is always involved when we're speaking of divorce. We wanted really to get a look, though, at the applications in the New Testament of what did Jesus have to say? How did he apply this general idea of divorce? And we first looked at Deuteronomy 24 for the Old Testament regulation of divorce. How did God apply it in the Old Testament? And what we saw is that there's no permission or approval given. There was just regulation in the event that a man divorced his wife and then she married someone else. There'd be no way for him to take her back. We began last time looking at the New Testament, though, and Jesus' clarification of this issue of divorce. When we looked in Matthew 5 last time, verses 31 and 32, in the context there, the Sermon on the Mount, where Jesus is preaching on the righteousness of the kingdom, and he says in verse 20 of Matthew 5 that unless your righteousness exceeds the righteousness of the Pharisees, you by no means will enter into the kingdom of heaven. So it's a comparison of religious righteousness, man's righteousness, and God's righteousness. And as he gets into the context in Matthew 5 where our verses on divorce are, we actually see that it's teaching not on divorce but on adultery. And it teaches that the righteous person would not want to create situations of adultery, and divorce always creates a situation of adultery. And so that's what Matthew 5 taught us. Today we're going to look at, from a different angle, we're going to be looking at Matthew 19 and Mark chapter 10. We actually looked at some of these verses before when we studied the marriage aspect, because Jesus will talk about what marriage is in these verses, and we'll look a little bit at that today. But there's a question that comes up in both of these accounts, in Matthew 19, 1 through 12, and in Mark 10, 1 through 12, where the Pharisees ask about the lawfulness of divorce, and that's where we'll be focusing today and on Jesus' response there. So let's begin with the reading. If someone would be looking at Matthew 19, 1 through 12 to read for us, and during that time, someone else go ahead and open Mark chapter 10, verses 1 through 12, and we'll read those back to back and look at the similarities. Bob, it looks like you're ready to go on Matthew 19. Would you read that for us, please?
Now it came to pass, when Jesus had finished these sayings, that he departed from Galilee and came to regions of Judea beyond Jordan. Great multitudes followed him, and he healed them there. The Pharisees also came to him, testing him, and saying to him, Is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for just any reason? And he answered and said to them, Have you not read that he who made them at the beginning made them male and female? And he said, For this reason a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. So then they are no longer two, but one flesh. Therefore what God has joined together, let not man separate. They said to him, Why then did Moses command to give a certificate of divorce and to put her away? He said to them, Moses, because of the hardness of your hearts, permitted you to divorce your wives, but from the beginning it was not so. And I say to you, whoever divorces his wife except for sexual immorality and marries another commits adultery, and whoever marries her who is divorced commits adultery. His disciples said to him, If such is the case of a man with his wife, it is better not to marry. But he said to them, All cannot accept this saying, but only those to whom it has been given. For there are eunuchs who were born thus from their mother's womb, and there are eunuchs who are made eunuchs by men, and there are eunuchs who have made themselves eunuchs for the kingdom of heaven's sake. He who is able to accept it, let him accept it.
All right, so we've got this occasion when the Pharisees ask, Is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife? For just any reason. Matthew focuses on that part of the question. We'll see that Mark doesn't focus on that part of the question. So that'll be the difference in the way they relate their version of what's going on here. But this is the question, can you divorce for just any reason? Let's look and see what Mark has to say, and then we'll take a look at both of these in more detail. Who's got Mark chapter 10 for us? You got that, Nathaniel? 1 through 12, please.
Then he arose from there and came to the region of Judea by the other side of the Jordan, and multitudes gathered to him again, and as he was accustomed, he taught them again. The Pharisees came and asked him, Is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife? Testing him. And he answered and said to them, What did Moses command you? They said, Moses permitted a man to write a certificate of divorce and to dismiss her. And Jesus answered and said to them, Because of the hardness of your heart, he wrote you this precept. But from the beginning of the creation, God made them male and female. For this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife. And the two shall become one flesh. So then they are no longer two, but one flesh. Therefore, what God has joined together, let not man separate. In the house, His disciples also asked him again about the same matter. So he said to them, Whoever divorces his wife and marries another commits adultery against her. And if a woman divorces her husband and marries another, she commits adultery.
All right, thank you very much. Well, let's have a look now at some of the details that we get here. When we looked at the marriage question, we already looked at some of this issue in Matthew 19 and Mark 10. We talked about the fact that this is Jesus' commentary on Genesis 2. That's where he goes. He says, well, what was there from the beginning? Let's take a look at that, and then we'll know about your question, is it lawful to divorce? And so he begins by responding to a false question from the Pharisees. It's obvious, we're told, they're testing him. He knew they were testing him. So it wasn't an honest question, but he gives them an honest answer. He doesn't give them the answer they're looking for. He knows what they're fishing for with their question, so he goes to what they need to know instead of what they want to know. So he goes and gives them the answer of Genesis 2 and tells them, this is what you need to know. He answers their question on divorce by teaching on marriage. Because, really, God's truth about marriage should abolish divorce. We've mentioned that a couple of times already in the study, and that is an absolute fact. If everyone who gets into marriage understands what God says about it and is devoted to doing what God says about it, this is a moot point. There's never going to be divorce. It's not going to happen. But not everybody knows and not everybody wants to do what God has said. But that's the right response. You teach about marriage if people want to know about divorce, because marriage should get rid of the issue. However, he goes further than that. He does this commentary on Genesis 2, but then he also condemns the way they've been using Deuteronomy 24. Let's see how he does that. The question is it lawful for a man to put away his wife or to put away his wife for just any reason? And their question there is really pointed. Hasn't God said we can put away our wife? It sounds like the religious person today who says, Well, doesn't it say in the Bible that whoever confesses the name of God shall be saved? Why do you say there has to be baptism? Isn't it lawful that all you have to do is confess? They're not looking at the whole picture. They're not being honest even with what the Bible says. They're picking something that's to their liking and saying, this is what we want to do. And my response a lot of times to people that do that is, well, isn't it lawful that there should be arks being built so that we'll be saved from the flood? Well, they understand that's not lawful at all. That was something that was very specific for a specific time. In this case, Jesus is going to show them what the specific case was here, and we really have already looked at that. Hasn't God said so, that we can divorce for just any reason? Just give her a certificate of divorce, and that'll make it all okay. They're using Deuteronomy 24. This was the Pharisees' position. It was a very popular position at the time, that there were two major schools of thought, and one of the schools said, just anything goes. As long as you found something you don't like in her, then that fits in the unseemly thing, or however the word is in Deuteronomy 24, and you can say, I'm divorcing you for this, and give her the writ of divorce and send her out. There was another school that said it had to be some kind of sexual impurity and or some other ritual impurity that made you get rid of her. But those are the two positions. The most popular was, she burnt the toast, I'm getting rid of her. You had just, any excuse will do. So the Pharisees want to know if Jesus is going to challenge them, and we've already seen this, and he certainly does challenge them by saying, go back and look at what Moses commanded. What was the command from Moses? He knows they're looking at Deuteronomy 24. He knows they know Moses wrote Deuteronomy 24. He knows they also should know that Moses wrote Genesis 2. So what did Moses command you? You want to compare that to what they said in Matthew 19 as a kind of an objection once he'd done the teaching. Why did Moses command us to give a certificate of divorce? If you're saying we can't, why did Moses command that? He knows they're going to be dishonest. They're looking at this permission, if you will, as a command. He tells them clearly, Moses permitted you to have this certificate of divorce. And they even, in the version in Mark, say that's what it is. It's permission. But then he tells them why, and this is the crux. This is not something Moses just went around saying, here you go, take this permission and go with it. There's something that happened. There was sin involved. And so he's regulating how far divorce can go. That's all that's happening in Deuteronomy 24. Again, we've seen this in extensions, so we're not going to go into the details of it in this lesson. It's back in about lesson 4, if you'd like to listen to that and get that information if you missed it. But he's saying the only reason this permission was given was because of sin. So look back at their question. Is it lawful? Hasn't God said we can just put away our wives? Well, what's lawful was the command. The command is you're to be married and you're to remain one flesh. That's what Genesis 2 says. And so he draws the conclusion, therefore, what God has joined together, do not separate. It is not lawful to separate. Let's take a look at an illustration of how that works out. Here's their question. Is it lawful to divorce for just any reason? That's what they meant. Matthew gives us the clear intention of their question. And so Jesus goes back to the beginning, God's universal law. He's not going to quibble with them over Jewish law. He wants to know about God's law. Is it lawful to divorce for just any reason? From the beginning it was not so. He brings that point out twice. From the beginning God made them male and female. They're to leave their father and mother and to be joined to one another. And who does the joining is God. So here's the couple that are now one flesh. And as God has joined them as one flesh, man has no part in separating them. Do not let a man separate this couple. That is what Jesus says. That's his interpretation of Genesis 2. His Holy Spirit-guided interpretation, his being God-guided interpretation, he says, this is what Genesis 2 means. If you know that, your question's a moot point. Here's their objection. Well, why did Moses command this certificate of divorce? And again, he only permitted it because of sin, because of the hardness of your heart. So what's the answer to the question, is it lawful? He affirms for the first time, absolutely not. It's not lawful to divorce. Just because it's in the law, just because there is this permission granted because of sin, doesn't mean that it's a lawful thing for you to be going around doing. It is a relegation, or a regulation, I mean, of sin. It's regulating so it doesn't get any worse. Is it permission when in 1 John, when we're told, if anyone sins, we have an advocate with the Father. We understand clearly that's not saying sin. In fact, the verse before says, I write these things so that you may not sin. But if anyone does, we have an advocate, Jesus Christ. Not permission. It's just saying, if it happens, now here's what you do. That's exactly what we're looking at in Deuteronomy 24. They abused it. And so Jesus got on their case about it and said, let me tell you the answer to your question. It is not lawful. I don't care if you want to use Deuteronomy 24 to justify it. It is not lawful. It's from sin. Well, he goes further than that in these verses in Matthew 19 and Mark 10. He clarifies the real issue, what goes on when there's divorce. Again, we've seen this already. As we've been going through the definitions, we expect what's coming here. But he's laying it down for them and making it so that they can't get out of it. Again, his basis is Genesis 2. His conclusion he draws after his recapitulation of Genesis 2 is, therefore what God has joined together, let not man separate. So again, he backs up that conclusion by saying, here's what happens if you do. When you separate, you cause adultery. You bring about adultery. That's the issue that's behind divorce. Now think about what causes adultery. Look at Matthew 19:9. Look at verses 11 and 12 of Mark 10. Whoever divorces his wife and marries another commits adultery. Whoever marries her who is divorced commits adultery. You'll notice that the focus is on the commits adultery. Now, the question is it lawful? Way up there, that's the false question they brought up. Is it lawful? Well, here's where they should come to the logical conclusion. If it brings about adultery, then is adultery lawful? What Jew would say, yeah, adultery is lawful? What Jew that knows Exodus 20:14 or Deuteronomy 5:18 would say adultery is lawful? What are those verses? They really said the same thing. Who knows what one of those verses says? Or if you can find it, read it for us. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Is it lawful then to be involved in adultery? Absolutely not. It's one of the Ten Commandments. Any good Jew knows that. Yet the Pharisees have made a way that they can break one of the Ten Commandments and get away with it by law. They're abusing what God has set up in the law. They're abusing Deuteronomy 24. So, absolutely not. Adultery is contrary to the law, is the conclusion that needs to be drawn while they're looking at that. Now let's look at Luke 16, because this is interesting and it bears on this issue. In Luke 16, we have a similar situation to what we had in Matthew 5. It is a conversation about righteousness that brings up this, all of a sudden, out of the blue verse on divorce and adultery. Somebody read for us when we get there, Luke 16, verses 14 through 18. Who'd like to read that for us? Jim, you got that?
Now the Pharisees, who were lovers of money, also heard all these things, and they derided him. And he said to them, you are those who justify yourselves before men, but God knows your hearts. For what is highly esteemed among men is an abomination in the sight of God. The law and the prophets were until John. Since that time, the kingdom of God has been preached, and everyone is pressing into it. And it is easier for heaven and earth to pass away than for one tittle of the law to fail. Whoever divorces his wife and marries another commits adultery. And whoever marries her who is divorced from her husband commits adultery.
I love the context of Luke 16 while we're talking about this issue of divorce and adultery here, at least. What Jesus has just talked about is the unjust steward. He's been talking about the lost things, the lost son, the lost coin, the lost sheep. And then he has been talking about money. So the Pharisees, who were lovers of money, heard these things and began to deride Jesus. They're talking about what a fool he is for saying these things. And then the very next thing on the other side, the other end of the context, is the story of the rich man and Lazarus, where Jesus is going to talk about those who have the wealthy living and have the ease of life, like the Pharisees did, and who aren't concerned with those who don't live that way, and they're end up getting theirs. So, and couched in between that is this little bit here where he is pointing out the falseness of the Pharisees. And he says in verse 15, you are those who justify yourselves before men, but God knows your hearts. For what is highly esteemed among men is an abomination in the sight of God. Think about these pompous religious Pharisees walking around with the long robes, walking along around loving to be called master in the marketplace or teacher in the marketplace, whatever the phrase was there. And they're just showing off how much they know about the law and how these underlings don't really know anything. And you know, even see that kind of in Caiaphas. These ignorant people don't realize what the law is condemning. And he's talking about his own condemnation and the fact that he's about to put Christ up on the cross. At any rate, when we get down to verse 18, we're in that context. The Jews, the Pharisees specifically, have been using the law in an abusive manner, and he just simply says, God knows your heart. If you're divorcing your wife and marrying another, you're committing adultery. You're just finding a way to do it within the bounds of the law. Well, you're not going to get away with it. Because in the kingdom of heaven, which is where everybody's pressing into now, verse 16, things are going to be a lot different than you're expecting. You're living a religious life. You need to live a converted life. And so he brings out this. And what he's saying is, you are just self-justified. You're not being lawful. The law's not going to justify you in your divorce because you're not using the law the way it was meant to be used. The only thing that's going to justify you is yourself. You're saying, look how clean a life I'm living, even though I might be on my second or third wife, but I've given them all certificate of divorce. You know, how can I have a problem with God? I've kept these things from my youth. Their heart is far from God. So Jesus clarifies this real issue. The real issue is, again, adultery. Adultery, adultery. How can it be lawful if adultery is the result? Again, let's take a look at an illustration of that here. Is it lawful to divorce for just any reason? Again, we have the conclusion, therefore what God has joined, let not man separate. That should already tell you something. How's it going to be lawful to undo what God did? Again, he made them male and female. He joined them together. They were one flesh, we saw. But here's what happens. Whoever divorces his wife, that link there, that relationship is gone now. You'll notice that they're still joined. We'll talk about this. This is the bond. This will be in our next lesson, I believe. Whoever divorces his wife, he's cut off the relationship and marries another, a different kind of a relationship here. It looks like a marriage, but it's not. It looks like a joining, perhaps. It is a marriage. It's not a joining in this sense, and we'll talk about that more in detail. Whoever divorces his wife and marries another, what we were told before, what we looked at on the last slide is, that's adultery. So is it lawful? No, it's adultery. That's what it looks like. There's two women that he's really involved with. That's adultery. Anybody can see that, and the Jews can see that. Whoever marries her who is divorced, well, here's a bigger problem. Here comes another guy along, and well, this woman's by herself. Doesn't matter that she was married before. She's got the writ of divorce. I can marry her. Deuteronomy 24 said it was okay. But there's an issue there. Jesus says that's adultery. And then, if perhaps she broke off the original bond and went and married somebody else, there's a third possibility. Again, we looked at last time that they're not being righteous at all. They're creating three possible adulteries in what they're talking about doing. So is it lawful to divorce for just any reason? Well, no. Adultery, adultery, adultery. That's never lawful. The general rule is, if you divorce for just any reason, you commit adultery. Pretty simple. That's the general rule. So that's the second time Jesus affirms an answer to their question. Yes, Bob?
When this female divorces a male, this is a new teaching.
Yes.
This is under new, are the times that Jesus was there, or the times future past him that he's talking about this. But at any rate, under the old law, women could not divorce their husband.
Right. And so
now he's given this example. If a woman does it,
yeah,
does it. So he must be speaking in the future here, right?
He's speaking in the Roman economy is what he's speaking to. This will be more applicable at this point to Gentiles that will be coming in. So it's more looking to the future. But unfortunately, this was already happening. The Jews were really far gone by this point. This was already happening. We get people like, I can't think of her name now, one of the Herod's wives, not Herodias, but one of the Herod's wives, Drusilla, who was a half-Jew. And she had already been married before, apparently, as well. And so you get these mixed-up marriages. And basically, he's just saying, doesn't matter who does it. the kingdom is going to have to deal with. The kingdom of God is going to have to deal with things that the Jewish kingdom didn't have to. And so he's going ahead and pointing it out. If the woman does it, it's the same situation. Now what's interesting is Matthew's the only one who talks about that. Matthew would have been a gospel that was written to Jews and Gentiles alike in a very different way than the other gospels were pointed. But he deals with this question. The point of it all, though, is his answer and his second time of affirming in his answer, no, it is not lawful to divorce for just any reason. It's adultery. It's adultery if you divorce for just any reason. That's the general rule. There is the exception, and we'll have to talk about that. Here it is. The explanation of the exception that does not cause adultery. Now, notice the wording there, too. What this explanation, what this exception is something that doesn't cause you to commit adultery. That's the issue because it's responding to the point of their question. And so I think that'll make sense once we get there. Again, their question, is it lawful to divorce for just any reason? And they ask that because, and Jesus pointed this out in Matthew 5 already, you know that it has been said. This is what you were taught. This is what the generations and the traditions of the elders have been bringing along, that sure, you can divorce for just any reason as long as you give the paperwork. As long as it's legally and properly handled, go ahead and go through with it. It sounds just like what religion teaches today. As long as you're divorced in the church, or as long as you're divorced properly, then you can go ahead and remarry in the church, or remarry properly, or myriad other diseased interpretations that are around. But they had been taught that, sure, for just any reason, that's okay as long as the paperwork's okay. As long as you follow Deuteronomy 24. What's fascinating about this is that Jesus, and we're told in Matthew 5 that he's fulfilling the law. He's not abolishing it. He's fulfilling it in what he says. And let's take a look at those verses because I think this is important. What he's fulfilling is the spirit of the law. I'll read these verses. Matthew 5, 17 through 20. Again, as he's setting up the Sermon on the Mount, he says, "Do not think that I came to destroy the law or the prophets. I did not come to destroy, but to fulfill. For assuredly I say to you, till heaven and earth pass away, one jot or one tittle will by no means pass from the law till all is fulfilled. Whoever therefore breaks one of the least of these commandments and teaches men so shall be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever does and teaches them, he shall be called great in the kingdom of heaven. For I say to you that unless your righteousness exceeds the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, you will by no means enter the kingdom of heaven." That's what Matthew 5 says. In Romans 8, Paul pointed it out a little bit differently, and I think it's important for us to take a look at this because he kind of defines a little more of what was meant here by Jesus not abolishing the law but fulfilling it, even though he did teach things that didn't fit in with the Jewish law. And we'll see what I mean by that in just a moment. He's actually teaching what the law was pointing at, what the law meant. In Romans 8, verses 3 and 4, Paul says, "What the law could not do in that it was weak through the flesh, God did by sending his own Son in the likeness of sinful flesh on account of sin. He condemned sin in the flesh that the righteous requirement of the law might be fulfilled in us who do not walk according to the flesh, but according to the Spirit." He's talking about that judicial payment that was required, the righteous requirement. It was required bloodshed to pay the price for the penalty. But this idea of the righteous requirement of the law being fulfilled, that's what Jesus is doing here. He's saying, you're looking at what the law says and you're finding ways around it while you're still doing it. You're hypocrites. What I'm teaching you to do is to fulfill righteousness, to do what God meant by the law. So, in fulfilling the law, he says, you were told one thing, you were taught one thing, but here's what I tell you. If you divorce for any reason except sexual immorality, you can give her the paper, but if you divorce for any reason except that, then it is adultery. And then he says the same thing in Matthew 19. Any reason except that. Sexual immorality is a lawful reason. That was their question. Is it lawful to divorce for just any reason? No, not for just any reason, but for sexual immorality, yes. It's lawful. That's according to God's law. You can do that. Now, that's a break from the old law. At some point, we're going to take a look at this comparison between Deuteronomy 24 and Matthew 5. But in the old law, what would have happened to the one who was sexually immoral is stoning. there would be no reason to divorce them. They would no longer be alive. And so you would be free to marry because that bond would be severed by death. This is different in what Jesus is teaching. Sexual immorality is a lawful reason now to put her away. Now, one of the issues that comes up is she would only be able to be stoned if she was caught in the act. It's possible that later you discover she had been unfaithful. You can't say who she was with. You can't stone them both. And so there would be a technicality in the law there. I'm not sure how that actually would have been handled because you had to have witnesses to be able to stone somebody. So unless they were caught in the act, adulterers weren't stoned. They were ostracized in other ways. But sexual immorality is a lawful reason. Any other reason, and I heard someone just recently asking about this, well, really abusive husband, and he's probably going to kill her. Can't she get a divorce? Can't she get out of that relationship? Not lawfully. Not according to God's law, she can't. It's a terrible situation, I understand. Well, he's going to hurt the kids. He's going to hurt her. He comes home drunk all the time. Well, if she knew about marriage before she got into it, she wouldn't be in a situation. I'm not trying to be cold-hearted, but according to God's law, she can't just divorce him and say, I'll be all right on the day of judgment. We have to know what does God teach about it. We need to work with the man and see if we can help him overcome his problems, and she needs to be working with it too. Any other reason, doesn't matter how emotional it is not a lawful reason. Sexual morality is it. Let's have a look at that. Is it lawful to divorce for just any reason? The general rule is no, because divorce for any reason commits adultery. So you've got your male and female, they're joined. Whoever divorces his wife and marries another, there's your adulterer. There's your adulterous situation. But, with the exception, here's the male and female that are joined. Sexual immorality comes along and she bites. She's become involved here outside of the marriage relationship. She has her own relationship arrow there. Whoever divorces his wife, there's no more relationship between the two. He's putting her away for sexual immorality. That bond is gone. He has put her away for that sexual immorality. He's free to marry another. Whoever divorces his wife except for sexual immorality. That's what happened here. That happened first, by the way. That's an issue that'll need to be watched. There they are joined together. The sexual immorality happened, and then he put her away for that reason. Doesn't say he put her away and then she committed sexual immorality. Put her away for that reason and married another. That's the exception. Whoever divorces wife except for sexual immorality and marries another commits adultery. With the exception, it's the same thing as saying does not commit adultery. The conclusion is that divorce for sexual immorality does not commit adultery. Now, why is that the case? Well, there's a big reason. The adultery already happened. It was already committed. It happened here. This putting away was not the cause of adultery. This sexual immorality was. So, in asking the question, is it lawful to put away? No, because it commits adultery. In this case, the adultery was already committed. Yes, you can put her away. You're not going to stone her in Jesus and the Christian economy, but you're going to put her away. You're going to put her away from Israel, and you're going to hope that she repents and comes back, at least to God. So, Christ says something that's different than what we saw. It is lawful to divorce only, I put the only there, only for sexual immorality. That is the only reason. Wow. Well, the disciples understood. They're listening to this teaching of Christ. They're in with this huge crowd. And we get two different looks in Matthew and Mark, some more details of things that happened. But their reaction shows just how serious this issue was. This is not something to be taken lightly. Unfortunately, that's the way most marriages are taken these days. They said in Matthew, if that's the case of a man with his wife, it is better not to marry. Well, that is definitely an overreaction. We don't want to throw marriage out with the bathwater. But Jesus says, you're right, it may need to be the case. It may very well be that it's better not to marry for some. Paul, the apostle, for example, said it was better for him not to marry. Look how he describes it. Some people are eunuchs from birth. Physical defects. Something happened and they're they're eunuchs. They're unable to participate in a marriage relationship for that reason, a physical reason. There are others who were made eunuchs by men. They were castrated. Then you have spiritual eunuchs, those who have made themselves as eunuchs for the kingdom of God. Paul the Apostle, he said he could contain himself. He said that he chose not to take a wife. And there were others who also had no wives that were with him. And there are others who, perhaps because of being put away, but not for fornication, have to make themselves spiritual eunuchs. They have to understand that this is it. I'm going to be by myself the rest of my life. Or they've put away someone, and it wasn't for fornication. That person won't have them back. They've got to make themselves spiritual eunuchs. I have to be alone the rest of my life, or until she decides to reconcile with me. That's the only way that it can be. Physical eunuchs are spiritual. And then he said, very clearly, some will be unable, and really the idea is unwilling, to accept this. That is one of the hardest things to accept when we're teaching non-Christians who have gotten themselves into a mess and are in a relationship they can't be in, or in a situation where they can never marry again. That right there is one of the issues that will keep people out of the kingdom. It's unfortunate. My own father, who's in a relationship he doesn't have a right to be in, when I was studying Mark with him and we got to this section of Mark 10, he said, if you teach that at your church, you won't have any members left. I said, there's 216 members and they all know what it says. If you want to accept it, you can accept it. But if not, reject it, but you're rejecting the kingdom of heaven. We never studied again after that. Some are unable and unwilling to accept it. In the Mark version, they gathered around Jesus when they were alone with him, and they asked him about it again. They said, we heard what you said. Did we hear you correctly? They asked him again about the exact same matter. Well, why would they do that? Well, they'd been brought up being taught that divorce for any reason was okay. As long as you follow Deuteronomy 24. So this was a shock to them as well. You have to remember their context. We sometimes don't give them credit for having been brought up the way they were and still overcoming that. Some of their difficulties are because they were victims of their own culture and teaching as well. So then when they ask for these more details, Jesus then clarifies, it doesn't matter who does it, the man or the woman, if the divorce was initiated generally, that's going to result in adultery. He didn't give the exception rule in this case in Mark. But they wanted to know. He said, yes, it is not lawful. It is adultery. All right. We've seen a lot. We've been through all of these basic definitions. We've looked at the Hebrew and Greek word meanings. We've looked at the basis for the regulation of divorce, when it happens in the Old Testament. And we've now seen this clarification, and you can put Luke in there as well, we looked at that, of how it's taught in the Gospels. There's lots more that we need to look at. And Lord willing, this is what I plan to do over the next few weeks, and then there are some other issues I know we haven't gotten to that we'll get to that will deal specifically with applications that have come up because of situations people have gotten themselves into. I want to see what the Bible says first on all these, then we can look at specific situations that we may know that people are in or that we've heard of or we've dealt with and how the Bible then applies in those cases. But Lord willing, next week we'll look at Romans 7 and a little bit of Mark 6 where the issue with Herod and his wife, his brother Philip's wife, where John the Baptist gets his head cut off. We'll take a look at that, and that'll help us to see this issue of marriage or bond, because most often the problem that comes up is people fail to distinguish between the two. They think any marriage is a bond, or any bond is a marriage, and that's not the case. And so we'll look at how these verses teach us that, and that'll also bring out in Romans 7 the other exception. Obviously, I'm speaking of death. That is one way to get out of a marriage. It's probably not the most popular choice, but it is one way to get out of a marriage. So that's the other exception. Then on the Wednesday after that, Lord willing, we'll look at 1 Corinthians 7. That'll take us a couple of weeks. There's a lot of stuff in it that's very abused. But the basic teaching that it's not to depart, that the Christian has no right to leave. But if the unbeliever wants to depart, let him depart. You're not under bondage. We'll talk about that. That's used very often to teach the possibility of second marriages for Christians when a non-Christian unbeliever leaves, which is incorrect. And then we'll look after that, this concept of remain unmarried or be reconciled, and another loophole that people think they found, are you loose, seek not to be joined, in 1 Corinthians 7. After that, then, we'll still have a few more to go, but there's at least 3 more weeks' worth of studies there. I appreciate your input, your comments and questions, and your suggestions for other studies.